For the current generation of youth, an app at the fingertips is the natural way to address almost any task. Their fluent use of mobile apps from an early age makes them different from all previous generations, even from young adults who grew up with the internet. There is much speculation about the impact of this constant immersion in new technologies. Do apps open new horizons or limit creativity? Do today's youth have a firmer or a more fragmented sense of identity? Are social media enriching young people's lives or impoverishing their relationships? In the new book, The App Generation, How Today's Youth Navigate Identity, Intimacy, and Imagination in a Digital World, Harvard psychologist Howard Gardner and digital media expert Katie Davis look at original research that illuminates these important questions. It's a great pleasure to welcome Howard Gardner and Katie Davis to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Howard Gardner, let us begin with you of how you look at apps and what brought this to your attention in the first place.
We've been interested for a number of years in the ways in which kids may be affected by living in a highly digital world. And we went beyond speculation to do a number of different things. We talked to well over 100 adults who've been working with kids for over 20 years and asked them about the differences between the kids over that period of time. We looked at works of art and of writing done by kids over a 20-year period. And we also interviewed many, many kids, and I also eavesdropped with permission on conversations among kids. So we have a lot of data. The question then was how best to summarize it. And the way things work in research and in writing is you talk a lot about things, you go over the data over and over again, and at a certain point it clicked. And what Katie and I concluded was that what's most descriptive of young people today is that they live in an app-drenched world. And that means that for almost everything they want to do, there's an app. And that app allows them to do things efficiently, cleanly, without lots of anxiety or lots of dilemmas, and then go on to the next thing. And of course, it's great if apps handle stuff which would be a burden for you, but if you become completely dependent upon apps, that's not a good thing, because not all of life can be reduced to a formula of one sort or another. And a kind of a disturbing concept we came up with was the concept of the super app, because so many young people today see life as a series of apps, one after the other. First, you go to a certain school, then to a certain college, you make a certain major, you have certain internships, you have a certain kind of mentor, then you go to a certain kind of job afterwards, and maybe you take 2 years off for Teach for America because you get extra credit for that. And we came up with the term super app to characterize that. But of course, full stop, you cannot plan a life in advance. Things happen. You either aren't risky enough in the chances you take, or you take a chance and doesn't come through. And if you see life as a seamless set of apps and that gets disrupted, you may be completely at loss.
Katie, what do you think it is about the app that attracts us?
Well, you know, if you think about what an app is, it's really a shortcut, and it's instantaneous. It allows us to perform discrete tasks, and, you know, we don't have to perform any sort of a Google search. We go straight to the tasks and the site where we want to go. And so it really does make life more efficient. It allows us to outsource a lot of our decisions for us so that we can not take too much time to think about them. You know, I use apps all the time to find my way around, to tell me, you know, suggest restaurants for me, and to help me communicate with the people that I know. And so I can definitely resonate with this, the attractiveness of an app. What we're very concerned about is, however, is that I can remember a world where there were no apps. And so if my phone did end up dying or I misplace it, which has happened a few times, after the initial panic wears off, I think I would know what to do. Whereas we're concerned that today's young people are becoming increasingly app dependent, where they are not just using apps as a starting point and then taking it from there, but actually as a starting, middle, and end point, and having apps really dictate or suggest to them certain experiences, certain actions, certain relationships or ways of being with people. And I think what's concerning is if you start to see more of the app imprint in who you are and what you do rather than yourself in your actions, you know, that's a concerning state of affairs.
As the subtitle suggests, Howard, you are looking at three vital areas of adolescent life: identity, intimacy, and imagination. And those are three, obviously, that are closely linked anyway.
Right. The idea of looking at those three came in part from our own observations, but they also came in part from the crises which the psychoanalyst Erik Erikson says that everybody in the modern world faces as we grow up. Who are you going to be? That's identity. Who are you going to have deep relationships with, particularly significant others? And then what are you going to give to the world, both in terms of children or offspring, but also in terms of ideas? So those, we call those the three I's, and that became the organizing principle for the book. And in the case of identity, initially when the digital media emerged, people thought this would be a wonderful place to explore identity, try out different things, something which Erikson thought was a good idea. But in fact, it turned out to be almost the opposite, because with the immersion of social media, it's a lot of pressure on you to develop a brand early on and stick to it. This is who you are. This is who you're announcing to the world. And so identity exploration is essentially shortcut, shortchanged, short-circuited. In the case of intimacy, people have 1,000 friends, but with whom do they have a deep relationship, and particularly a deep relationship where you can be in the same room, look at one another, face problems together, confront one another with things which aren't working out, as opposed to just sending a message with an exclamation point and moving on. Katie, do you want to say something about imagination and about creativity and what we found in, I think, the first real study of this during the digital era?
Sure. So what we did was really, I think I haven't encountered any sort of research that is comparable, but we analyzed young people's visual artworks and also their creative writing over a period of 20 years, and we looked at how have their creative productions changed from the early 90s to more recent years. And what we found was two opposite trends depending on the domain. So in the visual art domain, we found increasing complexity and sophistication and, you know, originality and these markers of creativity suggesting an increase in creativity in the visual domain. Whereas we saw the opposite trend in the creative writing. Not to say that the quality of the writing had decreased, but the originality and the willingness to experiment with different genres and characters who differ from the authors and in settings that differ from a school or a traditional setting that the author might identify with. So it was quite interesting, seeing those two different patterns. And there has been earlier research that indicates a decrease in creativity, but our research adds more nuance to that and shows that it depends on the domain that you're looking at.
We were reminded of Marshall McLuhan's phrase, the medium matters.
Right.
And in this case, it matters whether you choose to express yourself as a young person through the visual graphic means, which seems to be quite opened up by the digital media, as opposed to when you do it through word use and through the characters that you create, where we found a rather dulling effect of the 20-year period.
When you think about just new technologies of whatever it may be that have come up through time, when we got fast food and we got frozen dinners and people said, well, no one will ever cook again. And when we got television, people say, well, people will never leave their houses to go to the theater or to movies again. And what we found is that for most people, they have been able to balance that technology with other things. Is that an apt comparison in this case?
Well, we may not agree entirely on this. I think this is really different. I think with the proliferation of apps and the ease of ceding, CEDING, decisions to technology, there's a real chance that a whole sense of human agency may disappear, not dramatically, but essentially from, you know, one decade to the next. And I worry a great deal about this because I do think the wonderful things about human beings is we can do new things in new ways. And the more that we allow technology developed by somebody else to take over, the less likely that is that it's going to happen. On the other hand, the whole notion of contrasting app dependence to app enablement is saying that we don't have to be slaves of the apps. We can put them away. We can take note, for example, that even though a restaurant may be more popular, that doesn't necessarily mean it's the one that we want to go to. And also, it may be more popular because somebody has manipulated the numbers and to push it, or somebody's advertised on the site. So we're trying to basically give people some equipment and some encouragement so they don't simply become 100% app dependent. But we say in the book that we think this is as major as the invention of writing and the invention of printing. And even though human beings are still human beings, we are very different because of the invention of writing, and we are very different because of the invention of printing. But Katie, do you want to give your own view on this?
Sure. Yeah, I agree with that, and I would just add that, you know, people often, some people will say, well, you know, look at when the telegraph was invented, there was a huge panic that society would just fall apart, or maybe not that extreme, but there was some panic about how that would change the way we interact with each other. And the same thing with the phone, and as you mentioned, the television. And you might say, well, look, we're fine. We're great. Nothing horrible happened. And we are fine, but I think it is worth reflecting, what might we have lost along the way? We feel fine now, and we're going along, but when the telephone came along, what did that displace, and what sort of sensibility and ways of being in the world might we have lost? And this is our opportunity right now in the digital media, as it's new and we can still remember a world before that, for us to consider, what are we losing even as we gain things?
Well, the name of the book is The App Generation, How Today's Youth Navigate Identity, Intimacy, and Imagination in a Digital World. The book is published by Yale. Thank you very much both for joining us. I appreciate it. Howard Gardner and Katie Davis, a great pleasure to have you with us in the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, The App Generation. It is published by Yale. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.